All hail the power of Jesus' name. Let angels prostrate fall. Bring forth the royal diadem and crown him Lord of all. Bring forth the royal diadem and crown him Lord of all.
I existence of God from the impossibility of the contrary. The transcendental proof for God's existence is that without him, it is impossible to prove anything.
Let every tongue and every tribe responsive to his call. To him all majesty ascribe and crown him Lord of all. To him all majesty ascribe and crown him Lord of all.
Jesus Christ is King.
Take your head.
All right, well, welcome everybody to the Tag Your It livecast and podcast. I'm Ray Ray.
And I'm Dave.
And we're here again. It's been a couple of weeks, so it
2 weeks.
Feels a little rusty
two
for
weeks.
Some reason.
I know.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
It was good, though.
We
had a break.
Yes.
We had a 1 week break because we had the live show with Dr. Roberts, and then we had a break of a week, and now here we are with a guest that we have booked for a while. We have not called him up on the phone yet. We were having a few technical issues, and so we wanted to go ahead and go live to make sure that everything was ironed out before he came on, which gives us the opportunity to do a few things.
Bam! If you guys recognize this from a past time, this is the Apologetics Conference that we've been talking about, Apollicon 2018, which will be held in Springfield, Missouri, November 2nd and 3rd, 2018, at Emmanuel Baptist Church. That's Northside Nichols here in Springfield. So, you know, we're going to inundate you. Please inundate others, because this is an awesome free event that I wish somebody else did a long time ago. But, you know, it's like, let's put our money where our mouth is and equip the saints.
That's and I think it's really important. You know, we've had some really awesome blessings. We've already had confirmation from multiple sponsors and partners to come with us. And we already have a question that we can't answer yet. Thank you, Darren. We're so glad. He wanted to know who would win a debate, White or Van Til. That'll be a great question to ask Colton. I'm really curious what he's going to say on that. But Darren, we're thankful that you're watching. We're thankful for everyone who will spend the time to listen, to watch, to share, to encourage others to listen. We're having a good time. We're glorifying the Lord. And this is something that we really enjoy doing. And with that, we just always covet any prayer you could say for us, any opportunity that you would have to share anything that you learned from us getting together and enjoying and encouraging one another with others. We would encourage you to do the same thing on that. With that said, not only do we have the grand privilege to announce Apollicon, we also have something coming up even before
That's right. We have a book. There will be a book. And I know we've talked about this before, and I kind of missed it on the last little thing that introducing Apollicon. But anyway, just wanted to remind you guys, Show Me Why Thoughts.
Show Me Why Thoughts on Missouri Baptist Apologetics Network
whatever.
Members.
Yeah, there's a colon there and an extra part of the title. But anyway, Show Me Why is a book that's being produced by the Missouri Baptist Convention. Rob Phillips, the head of the Apologetics Network, you know, one of the main guys put this together. But the whole point was the people that are part of the Baptist or the Missouri Baptist Apologetics Network, this is getting our thoughts out there, what we wanted to write about. We got to kind of write on whatever we wanted to write on concerning apologetics. So Dave and I, along with John Anthony Hayashi that's been on the show. Will Hoffman that's been on the show. And, I mean, there's more. I guess trying to think who else has it.
Tim does not have a chapter.
No.
That's okay. Ed Krautu, maybe.
Krautu.
I don't know if he does. Does he have a chapter? I'm not
I need
sure
to look
if he
again.
Does.
Yes.
He might not. But here's the thing. Go for it. I don't want
to interrupt
you.
But anyway, I just wanted to say, you know, that book is coming out. And the cool thing is the Missouri Baptist Convention, you know, the time where
the Missouri Baptist Annual Meeting.
Annual Meeting, that's right. Yes, the Missouri Baptist Convention Annual Meeting. I guess I might be equivocating the word convention there. But anyway, we're having that here in Springfield this year at Crossway Baptist Church. And so there's going to be tons of tables out of tons of ministries. And we, Dave and I, get the privilege of manning the Missouri Baptist Apologetics Network table.
And here's the thing. We will be handing out free copies of that book. So if you're in Springfield and you have nothing to do with the Missouri Baptist Annual Meeting, cool. Come by Crossway. It is October 22nd and 23rd. I got to double check my dates on that. 22nd and 23rd. Come by and get your free copy of Show Me Why. And with that said, one other little thing I want to make sure we get out to, because this is extremely important. Along with that, we would encourage you to come. If you cannot come to get your free book, then you can join us live. We will be posting live videos throughout the entirety of the Missouri Baptist Annual Meeting with apologists, with people who are part of the Missouri Baptist Convention, pastors, and people who are, at least in my mind, of some significance. So with that said, we have our phone call here with Colton, and we're going to go ahead and get to that. So it is calling. I am calling him, and I'm putting it on speakerphone.
See if he picks up.
Hopefully he does. Otherwise, we'll really be in trouble. Hey, Colton, this is Dave. How are you?
I am doing good, Dave. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great.
Oh, we got you.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear the both of you.
All right. Well, this is Adam Cochran. I'll let him introduce himself to you.
I get to introduce myself all the time anyway, because Dave is awesome and connects with people like you. But anyway, I'm just the co-host of Tag Your It with Dave here. And so I'm thankful for you to come on the show, because we are going to talk to you about the great founder of our apologetic, I guess not, he's not really a founder, he just kind of expounded on it, but Cornelius Van Til. You are a fan of Cornelius Van Til, aren't you?
Absolutely, I am. I love him, and I hope that this conversation is edifying to all the listeners.
Hope so.
Well, man, I know that it will be. I had a guy from my church tell me how excited he was to get to hear someone actually teach on Van Til. But before we do that, Colton, tell us a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to us. I know I was first introduced to you through, I think Sam introduced me to you, and
it was actually Brock.
Brock, okay.
Brock, through that apologetics conference we did a couple years back.
Okay. Yes, there you go.
In Buffalo.
Yeah, that's Brock right. Introduced me to you, said that you were a big presuppositionalist, and I should have you come and speak at a conference that we were hosting at First Baptist Buffalo. That featured not only you and Sam Parkinson, but also Rob Phillips and, not to be outdone, Dr. Ted Cable. So, but besides that, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, so my name is Colton Strother. I'm an associate pastor at First Baptist Church, DeSoto. That's a little town about 45 minutes south of St. Louis.
Okay.
And me and my wife here, we moved here, I guess, in April. And so we haven't been here too long, a little over 5 months. And before that, we were both in Kansas City. I studied at Midwestern with a bunch of the friends who Dave knows out there, and studied there for 3 years. Before that, I actually lived in Springfield. I did my undergrad work at Missouri State, so I'm familiar with your guys' neck of the woods. So that's pretty neat that you guys are putting on the Apollocon, because I know the landscape of that town pretty well, and some of the lostness there that needs to be, have light shown into. So that's a very cool thing that you guys are doing. But other than that, yeah, I'm the associate pastor of Next Generation here at First Baptist DeSoto. Basically, what that looks like is all of the Next Generation, if you want to call it that, ministries are under me. So I deal with the college students and the high school students, junior high students, and the kids ministry. So I've got a pretty broad umbrella here, but it has been a blessing for me and my wife since we moved here in April.
Well, I wore my Missouri State shirt in honor of you as a fellow Missouri State alumnus. So we're an alumnus of two of the same schools, by the way, which is crazy.
And my only connection with you would be I love Van Til and I've read a lot too. That's about all I got.
Well, speaking of Van Til, how about you just, I often think I know more than what I do. That happens way too often for me. And so I just wanted to begin with a real simple question. Who is Cornelius Van Til?
That's a difficult question to answer. He is a lot of things. He's a philosopher, he's an apologist, he's a theologian, but chiefly he was a churchman. He was a minister in the OPC for over 40 years, and he did that in conjunction with his work at Westminster. And so he, I guess I can just give you a little bit of a background about him. He lived during the 20th century, and one of the neat things is a lot of the gentlemen who you'll read who are appropriating Van Til today, people like John Frame and Scott Oliphant, they were contemporaries in a lot of ways with Van Til. They didn't come up at the same time as him, but Van Til passed away in 87, and so he's only been gone 31 years, and so he had a long legacy of being kind of one of the reformed presuppositionalists who was just a pillar of defending the faith in those kind of communities for a long time. He actually lived to be 91. And so he's, in a lot of ways, we talk a lot about being a pastor theologian today. He really exemplifies that in a really academic way, being a man who not only taught at Westminster, but was in the pastorate. Right, we're all probably at least a little bit familiar with Bonson's work, Van Til's apologetic, and in that he calls Van Til a powerful pulpiteer. And for somebody who's in the academy to be in the church in that kind of a capacity, that's really encouraging to me. And so that's a little bit about Van Til. I could give you more about him coming up through Old Princeton and all of that, but in an overview, he's an apologist, theologian, churchman, philosopher.
Yeah, and I mean, to add to that, I mean, we'll get into a little bit more of the controversies a little bit later in a question. But anyway, just to, you know, you talk about that churchman mentality and being an apologist and stuff. There is something about that. He was also the systematic theology professor at Westminster, and there's a little issue with that, isn't there, when it comes to presuppositional apologetics, that a lot of people hit it up that this is theology, this is an apologetics, you know, like explain more about like him being the theologian and how that influences apologetics.
Yeah, well, for Van Til, he's just so unique in his thought, because whenever he taught, if you ever read any of his syllabi, or even if you read Defense of the Faith, the first part, when you get in immediately, he doesn't have any desire to kind of piecemeal his theology. And, you know, a lot of times when we read systematic theology books, there's going to be a section on the doctrine of God and on revelation, like, you know, general and special revelation. And there's going to be these categories that are pretty clean and pretty outlined. But for Van Til, he sought to give the whole counsel of Christianity kind of all at once. Because for Van Til, systematic theology and apologetics weren't necessarily separate disciplines. Mm-hmm. Systematic theology was the statement of faith, and apologetics was just the defense of that faith. And so for him to separate those things in his theology would have been really confounding, because he didn't view them separately. So that was part of, even though, you know, there wasn't really necessarily controversy with him being a theologian at Westminster, there's probably just a little bit of rub between some of his students and the way he taught, because he did come, you know, with a real apologetic angle to his theology classes because of his ultimate, which we can talk about his theology and apologetic style in a minute if we like, but because of what he believed, he didn't view them separately. He viewed them as, you know, just two sides of the same coin, if that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So would that then kind of cause him to stand out as a apologist theologian? And if that caused him to stand out, would that be what makes him significant? And could you maybe explicate a little bit on that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, while he was alive, it was often kind of stated that, how do you say that? The people who read Van Til were divided into two categories. People who didn't understand him and people who disagreed with him, kind of thing. And a lot of people just couldn't really grasp what he was doing, because he came from he came ultimately from the Netherlands, right? But he lived in Michigan for a while before moving and studying at Princeton. But he was in Old Princeton before the break into Westminster. That's where he studied. He got his PhD at Princeton Theological, and then he got his PhD at Princeton University. And so he was there at the same time of Machen and Boss and all of those guys, all of those like trademark reformed guys, he was there with all of them. And so what makes him significant, I think, is his overall consistency. And what you see whenever you read his books, a lot of, he spends quite a bit of time dealing with his detractors, because whenever there was a critique of his consistency, he would see that as something that needed to be written off if he hadn't talked about it or brought it to light yet. And so his consistency, which is all a part of his broad theology, how he views everything, right? I can just kind of get into it now. But he views everything as being ontologically, which means everything finds its being as derivative or coming from the Trinity. And because of that, right, that's where we get logic and we get reason. All things kind of flow from that. And so if you read Frame, John Frame, Frame is going to say that Van Til is significant because of his consistency with the creator-creature distinction, which is a part of what it's a part of what absolutely is the origin of Van Til thought. But the ultimate origin for where Van Til gets his direction is from the Trinity. And so I think his significance comes in because everybody was kind of taken aback at his consistency. And there's going to be, you know, like I said, his detractors who don't understand him are going to say he was very inconsistent, because he is a very complicated writer, and it's going to take him a couple pages to say anything of any significance. But it's because he's trying to be careful, and he's trying to nuance what he's saying to be able to keep with his consistency. So I would say that that's what makes him the most significant, is his desire to be, from beginning to end, his whole thought being one consistent stream, if that.
Oh, yeah.
So then, and, you know, I try to not be word for word sometimes in my questions that I've already given you as I bring them out, because as we speak, you know, obviously it kind of sparks different things in my mind. But if you're going to take at the graduate level or at any level a apologetics class, why would Van Til either be not mentioned, or why would maybe he be flipped over? Or, I mean, is he going to be a major, you know, a major peg in getting to the destination of what is apologetics? Does that make sense?
Because, well, two reasons. Because Van Til was chiefly a Reformed theologian of the Herman Bavinck, Abraham Kuyper, I mean, the Dutch tradition.
Yeah.
And he was in their stream. And so any subset of apologetics that belongs to a school of Christianity that's not chiefly Reformed, they're going to have major issues with what he believes, because all of his apologetics, the backbone is Reformed theology. And so if you think of like a William Lane Craig, for example, William Lane Craig is directly incompatible with everything that Van Til posits, because theologically they disagree so substantially. Even if you read much Frame, if you read much John Frame on Van Til, John Frame often cites that William Lane Craig doesn't even give, because he's in a lot of ways, he seems upset about what Van Til's doing, but he doesn't even give Van Til credibility as a philosopher, because they disagree so heavily on major, just plain theological issues. William Lane Craig from the Molinist camp, and Van Til from the strictly Reformed camp. And so I think that that's kind of one of the reasons why he gets misunderstood, especially at you know, if you go to like a Baptist seminary that has traditionalist roots, they're wanting to paint a picture of the whole kind of, you know, apologetics as a whole, not just one discipline. And so often he'll get looked over, because to really assign yourself to his theology and apologetic consistently, you have to assign Reformed theology to it as well. They're inseparable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, right on.
And this was recognized, I don't know if you're familiar, but there was a sort of an apologetic approach debate between Seitan Brugenkate and Eric Hernandez, which Eric Hernandez is a guy, at first I was like, oh, he's totally, like, he's on the logic debate, he's totally presuppositionalist. And then when it comes down to this, this is when I find out he's actually a classical or evidentialist. And I was listening to William Lane Craig critiquing, or like, you know, critiquing this talk and stuff, and Seitan Brugenkate brought it out, that this is a Reformed apologetic. And then William Lane Craig was like, basically in a way saying, like, you can't corner the market on apologetics. So, I mean, this is a real distinctive of Van Til. I'd have to bring out, if anybody gets on monergism.com, you can get Defending the Faith by Cornelius Van Til, which addresses this very issue very well in only 74 pages, and it's probably one of his most easiest read works. So, I don't know, you mentioned that earlier too, and I just wanted to bring that to light, because that is a book that he wrote that is, like I said, 74 pages, and it's probably his easiest read.
Colton, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to read just a little piece from William Edgar's introduction to Cornelius Van Til's book, Christian Apologetics, and I'd kind of like to get your thoughts on it. He says this, Van Til's goal as a presuppositionalist was to show that the Christian worldview is the only rational and objectively valid one. Without it, nothing makes sense. In fact, he held that there are all kinds of compelling proofs for the validity of the Christian position. The Christian apologist can begin an argument virtually from any point in human experience and show how it voices this truth. When you think of the Reformed apologetic, how is it that it distinguishes itself, particularly in Van Til, from what we see in the, what I would say, catch-all smorgasbord or, you know, buffet-style, for lack of better term, type of apologetic approach that we see even in what I'd say is more the evidentialist, classical apologist position?
Yeah, so for Van Til, a really helpful primer, if, say, there's somebody listening who, you know, a lot of what is in Van Til is very complicated, right? He was a philosopher, and so he uses some idealistic, like, conscient idealistic terms that can be kind of confusing at times. A good primer to start to really tease out these sort of things is Scott Oliphant. He wrote a book called Covenantal Apologetics.
Yes.
It's very helpful. It's a really helpful primer. And what he does in that book is he really synthesizes forwards what Van Til's apologetic is. And so to that end, what I would say regarding your question, Dave, is in Van Til's apologetic, he has two motives, right? There's two big, some would say that there's more than this, but there's two big movements in his apologetic. And the first one is a negative movement. And this movement, what it seeks to do is he talks often about Romans 1 and how those who aren't Christians, those who don't understand that God is true, they suppress the knowledge of God in their unrighteousness. Mm-hmm. And in Van Til's understanding of the noetic effects of sin, for how sin affects our minds, he views that unbeliever can't reason to any rational perspective, because only what is ultimately true is what's true about the triune God who from all things flows. And so for Van Til, he calls that unbeliever, he equates them to the man in the iron mask. And before we can speak to the man, we have to take off the iron mask. And so he seeks to negatively, it's not like negative in a bad way, but it's negative in the sense that he seeks to get in the unbeliever's worldview, show them their inconsistencies, and then invite them positively, that's the second movement, invite them positively to understand the Christian worldview. So he'll sit, that's why he spent so much time writing against his detractors and speaking against conscient idealism, because he sought to get into their worldview, show its inconsistencies, and then invite that person over into his worldview, and then show them the truths of the Reformed faith and how what can be ultimately known and ultimately consistent and what is ultimately rational is found in that worldview. And so those are kind of his two movements, to negatively kind of deconstruct the unbeliever's worldview and then to positively construct the Reformed position. So that's kind of how his direction goes. And as you said, the question was kind of in the line of how do we, you know, think about this position as it relates to, like, evidentialism, because one of the biggest misunderstandings of Van Til is that he doesn't have a use for evidences. Because he's chiefly presuppositional, there's no room for evidences. And that's not true. Van Til uses evidences all the time, but he's not going to use evidences in the first movement. He's not going to use evidences to disprove someone's worldview. They have to be invited into our worldview in order to see how we interpret these evidences. Otherwise, you're going to have evidences that are heaped on an unbelieving mind, and they're just going to cast them over the hill, right? They're seeing it through their own worldview. They'll interpret those, whatever that data is, they'll interpret it in their own right. But not until they're sitting in our car with us can we adequately show them those evidences, whether it's the resurrection or whatever, any life experience, creation, whatever evidences we're seeking to show them, until they're in our car, then it's kind of a futile endeavor. That's really what Van Til's after when it as it relates to evidence.
And one thing about that, if you don't mind me kind of putting in and maybe questioning you on this, one of the things that we often do on our podcast is we'll grab a current event, and we will try to demonstrate how the unbeliever is living outside of or inconsistent with the worldview by which they profess. Mm-hmm. And therefore, what they're saying makes no sense if they're going to be consistent in affirming the worldview that they say they affirm. And would you say that that would be the negative movement?
That would be if it's coming against the worldview that they affirm, then that would be the negative movement. Yeah.
Gotcha.
It would be, he never puts it in those terms. Oliphant is the one who puts it in those terms. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I would say that it, yeah, falls within that category.
Man, I appreciate that, because that's one thing that has kind of drew me to. Just to give you a little bit of background, you know, you and I know some of the same people. We don't know each other all that well, just a few conversations. But, you know, I was so blessed to get to go to Midwestern like you did, and I'm so thankful for that opportunity. But I found myself, even as a seminary graduate, sometimes dealing with an atheist, and I would say, well, gosh, they've got the greatest arguments. I mean, yeah, if a good God does exist, why does he let these bad things happen to kids in cancer wards? And it was Van Til's approach that gave me eyes for the reality and what I've found in Scripture when I go through, and as I preach, I'm actually preaching through the book of Acts right now. I've been doing it for about 2.5-3 years now. I keep finding this biblical approach and that negative, what I would say sometimes, maybe it's not the best way to put it, but a deconstruction of or demonstration of the inconsistencies within the oftentimes a naturalistic worldview, and then pulling them towards the gospel because you've lifted the veil over their eyes by demonstrating their inconsistency. Just an incredibly remarkable, remarkably simple method. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, and that's one of the things that makes Van Til so unique, is that if you get to the heart of his theology and his apologetic method, that it is. It's very simple. It's quite simple, actually. But because he's a philosopher and he seeks to build a foundation scripturally and philosophically for these things, that a lot of people get lost. They kind of get lost in translation, and they accuse him of things that are pretty unhelpful and say things about him that are just plainly not in his work, because there's a lot of misunderstanding. It is, whenever he gets boiled down, I think Oliphant did a good job in synthesizing him in that particular area. Whenever you see it in that respect, it is very simple. And what's beautiful, ultimately, about his apologetic is how he doesn't see it as a separate, right? There wouldn't be, there's not, how do you say, the apostolic office of the apologist, or the church office of the apologist.
I love that.
It's something that is woven into the DNA of the believer. Mm-hmm. And for Van Til, all a Van Tilian really needs is a Bible and an ability to understand the world around them, that when they come to the light of the gospel and they come to faith in Christ, that ability to understand the world around them is given to them through the Spirit, right? And so a believer with a Bible, that's what you need to do apologetics on any arena. That's one of the things that's so brilliant about Van Til's worldview, because not only does it have the scholarly academic foundation, the philosophical foundation that he's kind of worked out through all of his works, but it's practical for every believer. So it has the teeth of, you know, the academy behind it. It's got the praxis for the lay pastor who's just trying to help out, you know, somebody who's questioning their faith in their office. So yeah, I think it's
so
wonderful in that arena.
Really important question from Darren Smith. Do you know Darren Smith?
So I've known Darren Smith kind of, you know, sort of. I know him through, like, we have similar circles that we swam in. We might have met once. We're in the Baptist Review together, so I see his name in there quite a bit. But I don't. We're not face-to-face friends. I wouldn't go that far. We are acquaintances, and I really respect the work he does over at Tower View. But I don't think I've ever met him.
Well, he has a really serious question for you.
So serious. This one's going to...
would win a debate? White or Van Til?
Oh, I don't. I think Van Til would win that debate. not because I don't like James White, or that I don't think he's a good debater. I think that Van Til has the philosophical rigor that... let's just say it like this. I don't think that James White and Van Til necessarily swim in the same academic circles. James White does a lot of textual criticism. He obviously, he's done a lot of debates against Mormons, and he's a debater. And if we're taking debate points, maybe James White would win. But yeah. As it relates to who understands the philosophical apologetic and theological apologetic of this type of camp, we can call it presuppositionalism. Van Til never really called himself that. Yeah. But if you want to call it that, who understands it better is Van Til. Oh yeah. My goodness.
Yeah. Well, very good. I hope you didn't mind that. That was a great question to move us forward into this next one. And hey, we want to be good with your time because I know that you have many fish to fry. And so do not let us abuse your time. But I really
I have all night, so we're fine.
Sweet, we got all night.
Well, how about this, though? Tell us a little bit about, we'll do a little bio stuff here on Van Til, but tell us about some of the controversies that he was part of as a theologian and apologist.
So one of the main arenas where Van Til, I don't want to say got himself into trouble, but one of the areas that really began to shine a light on his consistency and how he was kind of unwavering from his consistency is there's a man by the name of Gordon Clark, who is also a philosopher, apologist, contemporary. He studied at Wheaton. He was actually an OPC minister for, I think it was OPC. He was in the same Presbyterian kind of circles that Van Til was in. And in fact, for a while, they were friends. There's a story that I think Frame talks about where in the 1930s they would go on walks together and they would talk about theological discussions and things and how they would just discuss kind of, the ways of life for a pastor, academic kind of thing. But they started to have their feathers ruffled, as it were, around this idea. Some call it around God's incomprehensibility.
Yeah.
Others call it the common grace controversy. Yeah. Basically what happened, I don't agree with how John Frame appropriates all of Van Til, but I think he gets this controversy right to say that neither men were really at their best at this controversy. I think they had more that they could agree on than they thought. But even today, if you have a Clarkian, like a devout disciple of Clark and a devout disciple of Van Til, you can still see streams of frustration with one another. Lots of grenades are thrown at each camp. This is a pretty schismatic controversy in ways that it shouldn't have been. But basically, what this controversy was over was the creator-creature distinction in Reformed theology. Van Til believed that no human could ultimately come to true reason, not even if they were a believer in God. And the reason why he came to that conclusion was because God thinks and has thoughts and exists eternally. So his thoughts are eternal, his modes are eternal, and man's aren't. Man's knowledge is finite. We don't know everything. And so to put it simply like this, Van Til would say that God knows that 2 + 2 = 4, but he knows it eternally, and we know it finitely, okay? Yeah. And Clark would say that God knows that 2 + 2 = 4, and we know 2 + 2 = 4, and so our knowledge and God's knowledge on this topic are the same. And that caused a big rift in their following, because, it gets pretty technical in the language, but basically, Van Til was of the position that we think God's thoughts after him. Right? After God has thought, we think his thoughts after him. That's how Van Til put it. But Clark would say that when when we reason rightly about God, God's reason and our reason are one.
Okay.
And a lot of this comes to a head in how Gordon Clark would understand John 1:1.
Gotcha.
He would understand John 1:1 to be, in the beginning was the logic, and the logic was God. So this isn't like a Gnostic interpretation. He just viewed God's knowledge as integral to who he was and how he communicated himself to us. So whenever we reason rightly, we share in a part of God's reason.
Yeah.
And we reason with God in that kind of incarnational, realistic, like actual earthly kind of way. We are reasoning with God. And so if there's a Clarkian or a Vantillian listening, I could have gotten that more or less wrong. But to my best understanding, that's basically the difference in those two camps and what was kind of the driving force behind that controversy.
So I know. Go for it.
Yeah.
I was just going to comment on that. Like, I know Bahnsen deals with that in his book, Presuppositional Apologetics, Stated and Defended. And the real hang up for me, at least when I read his critique of Clark, which I'm sure was founded a little bit on what Van Til had said, was that same idea. I just think you completely communicated it even more effective than Bahnsen did in his book. I feel like I have now a little bit better understanding of what Bahnsen was saying because of the way you said that. And I really appreciate that. So then, why is that a big problem? Why is it a big problem that Clark was wrong? Just if you don't mind me asking.
It was a big, for them,
yeah.
It was a big problem. Well, think of it like this. Clark wanted to become an OPC minister. This is where the controversy ultimately comes. But because of this particular issue, and remember Frame's consistency as it relates to his Reformed theology and his apologetic, as a staffer, as a member of the faculty of Westminster, he was uncomfortable letting Clark come into the OPC, which, for the listeners, the OPC was created. It was originally, it was an offshoot of the PCUSA. The PCUSA at the time was creating too broad of a church for Machen and the Vantillian. So Machen created his own denomination, which at the time was the Presbyterian Church of America. It was the PCA, but then it changed names to the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And so the Orthodox Presbyterian Church and Westminster are closely related. And so Van Til was on faculty at Westminster. He was also an OPC minister. So the issue was Clark wanted to come into their denomination. And a lot of the complaints, those who were writing complaints against Gordon Clark as he was submitting his essays for entrance into the OPC, this was one of the big issues that they found fault with. And why they thought it was so dangerous, I really think that they thought it was so dangerous because they were talking past one another. Whether or not it was the fact that his view of God being able to, or man being able to reason on the same plane as God and in the same way that God reasons, some could take that to some unhelpful conclusions. But I think if they would have continued to take their walks, as it were, they might have been able to iron bit of this out. But the reason why it was a big deal was because he wanted to become an OPC minister. And for Van Til, the reason why it was a big deal for him was because his creator-creature distinction as it relates to common grace, right? So you might have also heard this as the common grace controversy. It is what was called into question by Gordon Clark, because Van Til understood common grace to be a couple of things, primarily how God restrains sin, right? We're not as sinful as we could be, and we're able to understand things generally about God in creation. So there's aspects about how Van Til viewed this as grace, as opposed to like providence or favor or whatever. He viewed it as grace. And so there was a little bit of how do you bring these two ideas? How do you bring the idea of God having thoughts and us thinking them act from, how do you relate that to common grace? If there is common grace, wouldn't we be able to think the same thoughts of God? And so there's just a bunch of questions, but Van Til posited that common grace in this arena doesn't allow us to come on the same thinking plane as God whenever we think things rationally about him and reasonably about him. So that's kind of the controversy is really broad. There's other implications and applications of things that happened, but in a nutshell, it was over this idea how we can know things, and do we know the same things as God? That's basically what the controversy is surrounding.
Yeah. Simplified, anyway, but yeah, man, we've been 40 minutes. So like, I want to continue though, but I kind of go down the list here of questions. But I just really want to get into that application. So we're very strict on, like, we're trying to tell people no church history, and Van Til is now, since he has passed away. That's been 31 years ago. He is a part of church history. And even though that's very recent compared to like talking about John Newton, like we have, or say Martin Luther or whatever, but he was a big figure in Christianity. He's made such an impact 31 years later. We're talking about him right now. We have Scott Oliphant, you know, championing covenantal, not presuppositional, but there's a reason behind, you know, switching the name. And we have Bonson, you know, he's a piece of history, but, you know, later than Van Til and all that stuff. So whenever we're thinking about Van Til, and church history, what is the benefit for just the average person, you know, to consider going that recent in history to really look at a historical, like, narrative of, you know, what produced Van Til, and how does that relate, and what's good to know to move forward in time in church?
Yeah, well, one of the things that's so good to look at Van Til for, if you look at his students, so a lot of people aren't aware that Francis Schaeffer was actually a student of Van Til. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Francis Schaeffer obviously went and started LaBrie. And there's other individuals who are very prominent in recent history. Like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with John Gerstner, who was ultimately mm-hmm. R.C. Sproul's mentor. John Gerstner was a student mm-hmm. of Van Til. And so there's a lot of people in very recent history who have been students of Van Til and who have, you know, presented mentees to us today who are still alive, like John Frame and Scott Oliphant, these individuals, and the most recent, you know, past R.C. Sproul. He was from that same, even though he's a classical apologist, he's from the family tree of people who were students of Van Til, as it were. And so Van Til is valuable because if you come to understand his whole school of theology, and you just see how consistent he was and how simple that can be applied to the average everyday lay person, that should be that's compelling enough to know that I don't have to, you know all about Herman Bovink and Abraham Kuyper and the Dutch mm-hmm. Reformed tradition. I don't need to know all about Old Princeton and Charles Hodge or B.B. Warfield. I don't have to know these cats to be able to benefit from the fact that there is in front of me an entire school of philosophy and theology and apologetics that is ready for me to use mm-hmm. because Van Til has laid the framework. He's done the groundwork. Now it's, you know, we don't have to, really, in a lot of ways, we don't have to make these arguments anymore. He's done it for us. We can just go ahead and get busy, you know, doing the work of the apologist and the theologian. And so I think it's valuable to understand those things, to see kind of the movements in history. But really, he's ultimately valuable in his consistency and how he can be applied to every churchman. Mm-hmm.
So this Sunday, I got to stand before a youth group, about 15 kids, and they were beginning their study of apologetics in their youth group on Sunday mornings. That's going to be their Sunday school material. And one of the things that I said was that I feel that apologetics is evangelism. And everyone who takes the Great Commission seriously is a apologist. Mm-hmm. Do you think that something like that would conform with the way that Van Til would see things? Or is that maybe a derivation of Van Til?
Well, I think that it's, right, his whole system is a whole, right? That's why he's so confusing, is he desires to give everybody the whole system all at once whenever he's communicating. And so I think that that's completely spot on because, like I said a minute ago, he desires initially to take off the iron mask and then invite that unbeliever into his camp. Yeah. And so as he's unpacking what Reformed theology is and what Christians believe, and as he's unpacking that for the unbeliever, the reality is the conclusion of that encounter is always evangelistic, because that unbeliever is never going to be able to understand what the Van Tilian is demonstrating unless they come to faith. And right, that's the that's the desire. The desire is not to win a debate. And I'm sorry, there's a lot of apologetics that's all about winning debate.
Yeah.
And that's just not the goal. The goal should never be to, you know, intellectually submit somebody or put somebody in the logical full Nelson. Like, that doesn't mean anything. Yeah. What matters is souls. And yes. Ventura, I mean, he's a prime example of that.
And so many great quotations here,
yeah.
Colton. I wish I could cut them up and make them into memes with your picture on them, and then I'd be famous. But this has nothing. This is not on the Cornelius Van Til radar here. But I have to ask you this because this is just something that kind of came to my mind. You were at Missouri State about the same time that the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster took off, or shortly after that. Is that correct?
I was at Missouri State at that time. I think I remember them having a meeting. I was not in the, you know, I didn't swim in a lot of circles that would have affiliated with the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, but I was very aware of them. They had things, you know, all over campus, and whether they were at, because at that time, I'm not sure if, I don't know if they're still there or not. That language was all over campus while I was there. And I know that there was atheistic meetings that championed the Flying Spaghetti Monster, but I don't know if the church was meeting when I was there or not, or if it was just the idea was still around.
So as a guy from Springfield, we're thinking about this Apollicon coming up. What might we do to, as we prepare and as we, you know, put out the word, what might we do to better communicate the need for something like this in Springfield?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer, because just like Van Til, he saw apologetics as something that was integral to theology. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of ways, it was happening for him, right? Because he was a pastor, a minister in the OPC. So he was doing theology and apologetics weekly from the pulpit. And the difficulty is there's a lot of tradition in Springfield. A lot of the churches that are in that kind of Bible Belt area are just kind of familiar with what they're familiar with, and in a lot of ways they're okay with that. And so I think the main thing is going to be communicating to, reaching, yes, out to church members, but for the individuals who are really going to be able to change the landscape of Springfield and the congregations in Springfield, it's going to be the ministers. It's going to be the pastors of the churches. And so even if it's just by personal invitation, you know, sending emails to the pastor who, you know, I would communicate to the people who can do what Van Til did and preach on a weekly basis and preach theologically and apologetically and preach a message that's going to allow the congregation to develop categories to be able to rightly open their Bible and communicate with a Christian worldview to unbelievers. I think that is, if you want to get people to your Apollicon, you're going to need to, I think, start with the individuals who can reach the congregations, right? I think that is, if you want to think broad strokes about the benefits of a conference like that, the ultimate goal should be, what are the lasting effects? And the lasting effects should be affecting the people in those regions who can, you know, reach the broadest audience, their congregations. Yeah. So that's kind of what I would go.
Yeah, yeah. So in that vein, I mean, hitting those pastors and stuff. So, you know, if there's a pastor listening to this podcast, either right now or in the future, you know, where would you direct somebody that's like, this sounds awesome, don't understand it? Like, what works of Cornelius Van Til would you direct them to as, like, say first read Van Til? What would you want somebody to read?
Yeah, so I would have them pick up the copy of Scott Oliphant's book, Covenantal Apologetics, because though it doesn't use the language presuppositional, it's a very helpful appropriation of Van Til.
Yes.
And then I would actually have them pick up the Christian Apologetics work of Van Til. So the book, The Defense of the Faith, is actually a monster book. It's not just 74 pages. Yeah. It's a lot longer than that. There's a fourth edition of it. If anybody wants to read, to climb Mount Van Til and read Defense of the Faith, I would encourage them to.
I think maybe what I was talking about earlier is defending the faith. So thank you for. Defending the faith is like a kind of a little story between Mr. Black, Mr. Gray, Mr. Black is the atheist. Mr. Gray is the, I guess, the Arminian, or, you know, the traditionalist, or I guess what you could say now. And then you'd have Mr. White as the Reformed apologist or whatever. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Never mind. Oh, okay. So thanks for correcting me on that.
Well, I'm glad. I've been reading Christian apologetics and tried to get a good amount done before we got to meet. Man, Colton, nothing to do with our interview. Are you going to be at For the Church conference this year?
I wish I was. I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. It just got put on my radar too late. We got here in April, and we were just boots on the ground, and to be honest, I completely forgot about it. So, no, I'm unfortunately not going to be there.
Well, brother, thank you so much for your evening. You've given us 45 minutes of your time. Brother, we are so thankful for you, and I hope that you will just encourage others to maybe check this podcast out. Mm-hmm. You have an open invitation. If there's ever a topic that you feel strongly about, I have great respect for you and your scholarship. And so just let me know. We are always happy to host you, connect with you in any way we can, and be an encouragement to you. Your ministry is, you blessed me by coming to my church, and you blessed me today by giving me just a grand, and I mean that sincerely, a better perspective on Van Til. So I want to thank you for that, and thank you for your ministry and expanding the kingdom, most importantly. So... yeah.
Those are very kind words, David. I appreciate it. Well, thanks y'all for having me on. This is good, and it was encouraging for me to reopen my books on Van Til. I've been reading some other thinkers these past few months, so it was good for my heart to pick up Van Til again for a while and study him some more.
Well, thank you. You have a great evening, and we will let you go, sir.
All right. Have a good night, man.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks. It was great to talk to you guys.
Thank you. Well, man, there it was. Yeah. That was great. That was our first ever only Van Til.
Yeah.
So there it was.
We should have been on that year and a half of this thing. We haven't really talked about Van Til.
Man, so cool. I enjoyed that. Yeah. Man, Colton's a great guy. So glad he came on. Well, gosh, we've covered just about everything that we can. And we even, did you see how we strategically moved it back to Apollicon?
Yeah. Because mobilizing people to do what the Christians need to do today. Because like it's in light, if you guys know me on Facebook or whatever, you always see, I guess what has been said is a bunch of big blocks of text that go nowhere. Because, you know, I've got people that, you know, whatever, you know, that don't necessarily care for what I, you know, post on my own Facebook page, and they want to talk about it. And I'm totally happy to talk with it. But the thing is we are doing this to mobilize people in the face of, especially whenever we consider that roundtable, what we're going to talk about, current events. Like, how are Christians, from a Christian worldview and from a Christian's perspective, whenever we hear the news and the media and all the stories and all the things that are going on in reality, you know, we have to approach it as that really did happen, right? If it's truly what happened, it really did happen. How does a Christian, how are they supposed to process these things? And then what are we supposed to do about it? So
I had to bring in that quote because that's what drew me to presuppositional apologetics. I can point out anything in the newspaper.
Yeah.
On the Facebook feed and show you. From God's word, here's how I can make sense of that.
Yeah.
You can't make sense of that.
Yeah.
Without it.
And it's one of those things that, you know, it's always the other side's like, well, I can do this without God. And then you can go, oh, you can. I mean, do you have the ability to? And why? Why do you have the ability to not consider in your mind God first? But the fact is, you're breathing in air that God created to live and do that. So it's one of those things they've presupposed, they have taken everything that God has graciously granted us in our sin, in our fallen state, and they've just presupposed that that's just the way things are. And we're here to give them the gospel going, that's not reality. Like, you have deluded yourself, that's not reality. The reality is that there's this God, he created you, mankind is sin. And so, like, what am I doing right now? I'm talking about the gospel. And so instead of sitting there going, well, there's an unmoved mover, instead of going, you can see the design and stuff, the thing is
you're Pascal's only giving them... wager.
Yeah. And so you're already giving them what they're rejecting. And so it's actually unreasonable for the Christian to approach that because we already know from God's revelation that they're already rejecting all that natural theology. Now, it's sufficient enough to damn somebody, but you have to approach it from God's revelation and nature. You cannot read the book of nature and fully get to the triune God in a fallen state. So that's Van Til Apologetic 101. But that's what we're doing with this roundtable that we're having on November 2nd is
First night.
Issue. So, we'll guess what? We'll talk about police brutality, and what we're going to do is we're going to charge the Christians there. If there is a person, doesn't matter who they are, if they're getting brutally attacked out of nowhere from the police, then we need to judge that by the scriptures and go, that was wrong and the policeman was wrong there. Or, on the other flip side, it was that person's fault and that's why that happened. But see, we have the scriptures which we can judge reality. And it's not because we're judging reality because we say so. It's because God has revealed so.
That's right.
And we follow suit. So anyway, I know that if somebody's seen any of that kind of talk going on and then charging me with a lot of stuff, that's what it is. It's the sinful person that's just trying to say because you say so. And I'm going, that's not what I've ever said. Scripture says so. God has revealed it. So I have to deal with it that way. Otherwise, I can't know anything.
Adam, I'm so grateful. Amen. I don't know what episode number this is. We've lost count.
Yeah.
But man, I know I counted. Great. I counted our live cast, and we're like, hey, we've put a bunch of videos up, sweet, which is cool, man.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Man, every time, it's just God's so good. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for encouragement. Thank you for the kind words you've said. We're so grateful to get to do this for God's glory. It's an opportunity to minister the gospel. And we just ask you to continue to share this and to make our podcast known to other people if it's been a benefit to you.
Yeah. So I guess with that said, we'll conclude this live cast and podcast. I'm Ray Ray.
And I am Dave.
And this is the Taggart Podcast, Sully.
Angels prostrate for you. Bring forth the royal diadem and crown.
Is king.
Take your man.